This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk UNLV at 91.5 KUNV. This is Dr. Tanya Crabb, and I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Dr. Sammy Scales, and it's a pleasure being here with you again, UNLV.
And we are joined today by Dr. Day. So, Dr. Day, would you care to tell us your origin story? Actually, first, let's start with your full name and then your origin story.
Thank you for having me here. My name is Jia Liang Dai, and as you know...
Did I mispronounce your name?
Perfect. And as you know, in Mandarin, we pronounce our last name, family name in the front. So my name in Mandarin is Dai Jia Liang, but in here it's Jia Liang Dai. But I found a nickname in, you know, English, Leo.
Leo.
Yeah. So I go by Leo, or you can call me Jia Liang.
Oh, okay. That is wonderful. And so it's Dr. Dai?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Dr. Dai. Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. Want to call you by your correct name.
And I was born and raised in Taiwan and came to the United States in 2011.
Okay. Well, tell us about your journey. How did you end up here at UNLV? What, you know, where did you work? Were you a school teacher at one point? And where? And how did you end up here at UNLV?
I went to Indiana University for, you know, my doctoral study, and then I went to University of Cincinnati. I found the major I love in public health with a concentration in health promotion and education. And, you know, before I came to the UNLV family, I taught for UC for a year and taught for Miami University for another year. Before I found a job match my career and passion here, and this is my 6 years here, and I am just promoted to the associate professor recently. So look forward to keep working with the amazing community here and people around.
Absolutely great!
Congratulations on your promotion. Congratulations.
Thank
so,
you
know, as I was reading through your sort of informal bio, I saw that you were a mental health counselor. A military mental health counselor and a former school psychologist. So what was that about?
I was, before I came to the United States, I was an elementary school teacher, and where, you know, I was put in whatever task the principal told me to do. Maybe sometimes I'm being a sports coach, coaching the soccer team. Sometimes I'm the social studies teachers, computer teachers, English teachers, because I have my training not only in elementary teacher education, but also a school psychologist. So I did a lot of individual counseling, group counseling, suicide prevention, family engagement activity with the children I serve. And then I was able to learn, work with those kids to learn we are so different, and thinking about the cultural background, family background, influence the behavior they show up. And then I try to use different activity to work with them. Science observation, sometimes we try to find different kind of bugs on campus. Sometimes I play basketball with them. I took them to the field trip. What I was doing, I try to build up the relationship with them so we can work on the behavior, that's presented in the classroom. Mm. And, then I found out I really like to work with people and know about people's cultural family and how that influenced the behavior, the human behavior. So I want to, because I'd read a lot of textbook from the, United States. And one day I thought, I want to go to, the origin place to, expose myself to the broader, field of knowledge. So I choose to come abroad to be the first one in my family to go abroad to study, and finally decide to stay here with a major in health promotion. I think that's because I want to work with people. I know I'm introvert, but I like to work with people, so I learned that can be, coexist. So I find a major, you know, I have to work with community member, school students, their family member, and work with hospital, church, nonprofit organization.
Okay, excellent, excellent. Now, as an editorial board member of a prestigious journal in health and education, how do you perceive the current landscape of mental health research in diverse cultural settings, just like here on the campus of UNLV? And also, part B of that question is, have you seen a rise in students or faculty and staff, for that sake, that's coming to seek mental health treatments since, you know, back in December?
That's a great question. I think from what I'm seeing personally, professionally, I think in the field of health promotion, mental health, I think there are some good news and some areas that we can improve. Good news is there are more and more people, they realize we cannot neglect the cultural background of our clients or the community member we serve.
Yeah.
You know, see more and more manuscript they submit for publication or research that's been published. There are a lot of cultural components. That's great. People are aware of that. But I think the challenge is that, for example, one, we need to have more diverse workforce, you know, as researcher, as educator, as health professionals. I think, you know, think about when your clients seeing the professional they are from, they share the same culture, they feel more comfortable. I think another thing for the future, I think, to, you know, promote the field as academia and practice, I think we need to provide more resources for cultural competence training for the, you know, educator, health professionals, or in the research.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important that when a person is going into a doctor's office, a counselor's office, or whatever it is, when you're walking into that office, and if you see someone that look like you working in that office, you're more apt to go back and to continue the treatment.
Right.
I would definitely, because Dr. Crabb is a counselor as well. So I would feel comfortable walking into a room, you know, going to seek those treatments,
right,
if I see someone that look like me and can actually understand my background and know my cultural background and know, you know, the things that I deal with on a daily basis that I can relate to. So the unfortunate thing about being an African-American, and I am an African-American, as you can say, the one thing in our community is that there's a stereotype where if you're going to get mental health treatment, oh, you got to be crazy to do that. But mental health, it's a real thing, just like alcoholism, just like drug addiction. Mental health is a real thing, and we need to pay attention to it and take it more serious.
There's so much of what you said that resonates with my soul, starting with, you know, the conversations about relationships and how important it is to have those relationships if you're going to help someone deal with their mental health. Not just showing up and saying, I know who you are, but actually taking the time to learn who they are so that you can appropriately help them. And that cultural piece, to your point, is exceptionally important, because when you show up in a space where someone has a shared history and a shared culture, you feel seen in a very different way.
Absolutely.
You know, you feel understood in a very different way. And then granted, you know, there are clinicians who are not clinicians of color who do excellent jobs. There's also something to be said about recognizing that someone from your culture prioritizes mental health. To your point, Dr. Scales, it's not just that I'm being seen by a person of color, but this person of color actually also believes that mental health is a worthy conversation to be had, which brings me to my next question for you.
Sure.
Can you share a little bit about your mental health research that focusing on cultural and family factors among Asian, Pacific Islanders, Indian, and Middle Eastern communities? How did you come to that work?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, I have the, you know, background trained in public health and counseling psychology and also teacher education. And I work with a population from, you know, first grade, maybe even younger, to older people, adults in our community. And I have seen, you know, people, they are immigrant. Even in Taiwan, there are many children. They are the second generation of, we say, their parents are from South Asia or mainland China, and they grew up in Taiwan. And I remember I lead a group counseling group for this group of kids, and they feel, you know, they are excluded because their classmates will think they are foreigner because of maybe their accent, or their one of their parents look differently. And then when I come here, I think, oh, this is even a bigger issue, right? Race, ethnicity. And I just, you know, reflect as myself as an educator, what I can do to prepare future generation. So I just try to have my, you know, future teachers, K-12, K-16, or future health professional in our community to incorporate this cultural, you know, sensitive approach in their services. For example, in my assignment, I require my students to incorporate, you know, social-emotional learning or cultural differences, you know, piece to consider in their lesson plan. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, when the students see teachers, they put an effort, you know, to have this example, you know, best related that I can relate to. Maybe my parents or grandparents, they mentioned about that. So they feel they are included instead of they are learning some knowledge that's far away from them. So that's what I'm doing practically.
What would you say are some important learnings from the research that you've done? What would be important for people to understand about that population in terms of mental health?
I think I missed this part. I think we also need to consider how the cultural norm, family, you know, expectation influence their help-seeking behavior. That's one example. For example, in many of the Asian culture, people, they, you know, believe collectivistic beliefs. Seeking mental health support is weak, you know, showing you weakness, right? Something wrong in your mind. But as a practitioner, we know that's just like a common cold, just not physically, mentally, right? We can get it treated. It's nothing about your personality. There are many factors, you know, influence this behavior. So that's one example, the mental health, you know, is seeking behavior that's missing. And there's also something like a different communication style. So for example, in some culture, they are not encouraged to say much, but in some culture, they are encouraged to express fully, you know, emotionally, whatever you think. But in some culture, they think, oh, I have to obey the ranking. I couldn't say too much than my teachers. So, you know, that also reflect on our teaching and research, you know, about how those cultural family behavior influence those human behaviors related to mental health.
Okay. Now, clearly you have a love for mental health, and just listening that you talk, I can hear your passion come through. What actually inspired you? Because earlier in the conversation, you said, I went to this particular school and I found, you know, the area that I wanted to be in. So what actually inspired you to get into mental health versus becoming an English teacher versus becoming a mechanic or engineer or nurse?
Right.
So what is that particular thing that got you into mental health?
That's a great question. I think that will make me bring up my, you know, story when I was an elementary school boy. I remember I was, you know, punished by, you know, a teacher or coordinate by, you know, slam on my cheek. And he say, no dialect, because at that time I speak Taiwanese instead of the official language. And then that was a big shock for me, because in my family community, we speak dialects. And then I was crying. And then when, you know, I had this bad experience, you know, with me, I rarely have someone to talk until I, you know, finish my high school college entrance exam. And I had the chance to become a teacher. And I had to choose the different major. And I was thinking, counseling or guidance, that sounds pretty cool, instead of administrative or, you know, science, social studies. And because I think, every kid, they deserve the opportunity to learn. And I want to use different approach to work with them, maybe work with, the same boys and girls, I was earlier. And then I stick to counseling field, providing different kind of services to the community. And then when I come to my terminal degree in health promotion and education, I still stick to, promote whole person health.
Yeah.
I couldn't, leave mental health. If I want to promote chronic disease, I have to touch mental health. And I also started to use sports, physical activity, that also trace back to, my experience when I was a little boy. I remember I kicked the soccer, to the wall and back and forth. I know sports or, physical activity or something that I can cope with the, frustration in school, that's very powerful. So nowadays I still, promoting sports, physical activity, yoga in my teaching and to the community member I serve.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that. So some things that just kind of play over in my mind is that mental health concerns are not a moral failure. They're not a character failure. It doesn't mean that you are a bad human or a broken human. It just means that you are human. And the part where you discussed recognizing how culture shows up in the room, meaning that even in something like an interaction with a counselor or someone in authority, that person's history, their cultural perspective affects how they show up for you in that space, whether they talk a little or they talk a lot or they defer to your judgment or they have their own opinions and that collectivistic piece. So I want to go back to the yoga piece because I am an absolute fan of holistic health. When we talk about mental health and emotional health, we don't often talk about the body. We talk about the conversations and the brain. So can you share a little bit about your foray into yoga? How did you get to the yoga space?
That's a great question for me to reflect. Actually, I want to give the credit to my wife because I remember I used to play basketball, soccer, baseball, running around, biking outside. And one time my wife, when we were in Taiwan and the time yoga became, bigger and bigger. And then she say she's going to a yoga class and she has to pay. I say, you have to pay to a yoga class? I'm going to play basketball. And then she say, oh, there is a spot, because, her friends cannot come. And do I want to join? And I say, okay, maybe you start as quality time. And I join. And I found the inner peace that I couldn't find when I play basketball.
Wow.
And then I found out, oh, I can incorporate breath when I hold in certain position, and I am challenging my, resilience, my will, and I have the goal in my mind compared to other team sports I play. Mostly, I release a lot of energy. I feel relaxed after that. But I think yoga or mindful movement gives me something different. Maybe inner peace, maybe harmony, maybe help me, find what is the purpose of the day or my life. So that's where I begin the yoga practice. After that, almost daily, and then I started to teach yoga for community.
Excellent. Well, could you speaking about yoga, could you speak to us about the event coming up in the SDPL Lounge here on campus on April 24th? And I do understand that there's breakfast included with that. And could you tell us also what type of people should be doing yoga?
I think yoga is really for everyone, and it can be, modified in, any place without any equipment. Even on the chair, even we don't have a yoga mat. And I think something cool is, based on my training, background in health promotion, physical activity, I started to see a lot of combination I can use, incorporate yoga or tai chi or mindful movement and traditional, body weight fitness activity. So that just make the yoga practice or mindful movement more inclusive. And I don't know how to say more about that, but I would encourage everyone to experience that, and hopefully you can, like me, stick to it for the life.
Okay. Well, the theme of that April 24th gathering over in SDPL Lounge is APME, which is Asian Pacific Middle Eastern Mental Health Matters. So is there anything in particular that you're going to be speaking about when speaking to that particular group, which everyone is invited, but particularly Asian Pacific Islanders, Middle Eastern students?
Yeah, I think yoga, you know, it's very inclusive, and it kind of, I think it's a way to help those, you know, community from the, you mentioned Asian, Middle Eastern and Indian, to think about, you know, how they can, you know, cherish the wisdom from their ancestor, and how they can find the root of their culture. They can start to practice again. Many of them, maybe the immigrant here, they come here for study, they forgot to practice. And there's also opportunity for, you know, other community member from other cultural circles. They can come to learn about this and think about how they can incorporate in their daily life. So I think it's really for everyone, even the event is, you know, part of the component of the Asian Pacific and Midwest India.
So, you know, as we're talking about this, first of all, I don't know that a lot of people realize there's different forms of meditation, and that movement is a form of meditation, and that the thing about yoga that makes it exceptional is a connection to yourself that doesn't require any outside. And side note, the military does yoga. Like, they've done studies for those out there who are like, yoga? I don't know about yoga. Yeah, it's really good for your mental health. It can help with things like trauma. They've done a lot of studies around it. So if somebody wanted to, you know, connect with you and find out more about these things and see what other types of offerings that you have, what would be the best way for them to reach you?
I think I can be reached by my UNLV email. That's chia-liang.dai@unlv.edu. So for budget consideration, our department took out our office phone, and that's the only official way that you can find me. But you can also find me on campus by, you know, setting up an appointment, and I'm welcome for everyone.
And they can also come hang out with you on April 24th at the SDPL from 9 to 10 a.m.
Absolutely.
And you'll be leading a yoga session, I understand?
As I mentioned, you know, we can modify in any way. Even you don't have a yoga mat, just bring water bottle or towel if you want.
I'm certainly going to be coming.
I will. Yeah. Check in.
just knowing that they're going to be providing breakfast is enough to get me there.
Oh, you had me.
And it's Mediterranean breakfast, so it's very healthy.
Ooh. Okay.
Yep.
That is wonderful. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was, you know, in addition to being someone who really values public policy, in addition to being someone who really promotes mental health and wellness, how do you impart these sort of things on your students? Like, what does it look like to sit in a room with you in a classroom around these subject areas?
So from the first day of the class, I begin with a short meditation with my students. Many of them, they freak out. I told them, this is a learning process, right? Many of you don't think meditation is for you. But if that's very interesting, when we change a term, breath work, we're going to practice some relaxation, they will take it. But if we mention, meditation, they have this bias, right? They thought they have to cross their feet and sit very seriously. But actually, it's just finding time for us to think inside about our intention, our purpose, and we just incorporate the breath work. Before that, many of my students, they say maybe they didn't realize, you know, they breathe. Maybe they take their life for granted, but when they look at those detailed things, they realize that they can slow down, but they can find their concentration and they feel relaxed. So,
at the end of each semester, usually, especially at the institution where I come from, students get to do a survey. So what are students reporting about these particular type of classes that you're doing? What are you hearing back? What's the feedback?
that's the message I learned from their course evaluation. They most of them appreciate the time to, you know, take the time for them to self care of themselves. Many of them are, you know, a full-time teacher, full-time health professional. They are also parents. They didn't have time for themselves. So maybe in class, that 5 minutes, that's the only time that they have for themselves. And they are doing it for credits. And it's a constructive way. They know what to expect. But they are also given the freedom. If they don't want to participate, they can, you know, open their eyes. Or they can do any other way they feel comfortable. Maybe they bring their squeeze ball instead of doing the short meditation. I do have some students, they really don't want to participate. But after a couple of weeks, they try. And then they had this big aha moment. They say, this is pretty cool. They're going to keep practicing. So I think I will keep promoting. But I also respect people. They may have different feeling, perceptions about.
That's one of the things that I loved about teaching when I was at San Diego State was those aha moments when students actually get it and understand the purpose of the class, the goals, the learning outcomes, when they actually get it. So definitely can appreciate that.
And I just want to say also I appreciate you, because as I sit here listening to you, I am reminded that we need to make time and space for ourselves. And I'm reminded also about how often we live outside of our bodies, you know, either in the future worrying about something or in the past regretting something that we've done. And we don't really have those opportunities. So to have something that's built in is quite a gift, you know, and it's a good practice to learn. So I'm glad that you do that with your students. And also, fun fact, I thought I was failing at meditation. Because I had an idea of meditation that involved like some sort of Karate Kid pose with my fingers. Like imagine Rafiki from The Lion King. But I didn't understand that it really wasn't about that. It was about the process that takes place inside of you, not outside of you, that makes meditation worthwhile. So I want to give you the opportunity. Is there anything that you would like to share or any last words that you would like to leave our audience with before we close out?
I think human behavior is a very complex, you know, outcome of so many factors. We mentioned about those cultural, you know, family expectations, stigma, discrimination, cultural stressors. But I think it also takes time and the whole village to work on it. When we talk about mental health, or, you know, whatever, healthy weight promotion, substance abuse prevention, promote whole person health. So I think it just deserves a lot of attention and people really spend time for themselves. I really want to see on our campus, we have this maybe approach 11 or 12 o'clock every, you know, time we have some time to do short meditation or just do some push-up. So I think
excellent advice. You know, my last thing in closing for this session would be many people are givers. Put limitations on the amount that you give, because you have people that are takers, and takers never put a limit on how much they would take from you. So remember to take care of yourself, your own mental health.
Yeah, and I would say I'm exceptionally grateful for this conversation, because we forget, and I too would love a world in which all classes started with some breathing and some downtime.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that I'm pulling into practice with therapy, is that before we get started, can we get centered?
Mm-hmm.
Can we get grounded? Because when you're emotionally activated, your prefrontal cortex is offline anyway.
Exactly.
And few of us really recognize the power of our breath.
And also when Dr. Grip mentioned about you are failing, that just makes me think that you are transforming instead of falling.
Thank you. That is a wonderful way to look at it. Yeah, I'm appreciating. And I feel like this moment was kismet. I was meant to meet you today. We were meant to have this conversation. Your presence is so calming, by the way.
Absolutely.
If I could go back, I'd go take your class. Well, and that will be a wrap. Thank you.
For more Let's Talk UNLV, be sure to follow us on social media where you can get the latest updates on the show plus great behind-the-scenes content. We're on Facebook at Let's Talk UNLV Podcast, Twitter at Let's Talk UNLV, and Instagram at Let's Talk UNLV Pod.